Hi there. Remember us? You've downloaded the SoxProspects.com podcast, hopefully on purpose. And yes, we are finally back into the swing of our normal production schedule, we promise. Thanks for downloading. Once again, allow me to apologize for having only done 2 episodes in the last 2.5 months. But I think we've straightened everything out, so we'll be back on the schedule. It's a special 4th of July 2-part edition of the podcast. This is part 1. My name is Chris Hatfield. Thank you for downloading. It's my pleasure to host 2 fine gentlemen on this episode of the podcast. First, our esteemed cohort from Sox Prospects South down in Baltimore, a writer for the Baltimore Sun. Even I can say all kinds of fancy things about him now. Our senior columnist, Mr. John Mioli. You can follow him at John Mioli at Twitter. John, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Great to be back doing Red Sox stuff.
Mm-hmm. Been doing a lot of O's coverage for the Sun.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. I've equated it to your first girlfriend being like a hard 9 and then never even getting to look at like anything below or above a 6 ever again for the rest of your life. Like,
that was great.
Oh dear, like, God.
And we're off.
And we're off with a rousing start.
I've had that chambered for like 2 months.
That's outstanding.
They didn't have room for Michael Almanzar. That's how good the Orioles system is.
Yeah, okay. We'll get to that in a minute.
All right.
That other voice that you've heard in the background, back stateside from his sojourn out to the motherland in England, our director of scouting and all-around swell guy, Ian Cundall. You can follow him online at Ian Cundall, CUNDALL. Welcome, Ian.
Would the motherland you're describing be the inferior soccer nation?
Oh, the one that didn't make it to the round of 16.
Yeah. Anyway, hi everyone. It's good to be back.
Hey, Ian.
It's good to be in the country where they play baseball.
Yes. Yes. On a day in which soccer actually had the headlines. So.
Yeah, let's not talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the last mention of how that went that we'll talk about. All right, so we're going to have a special 2-part episode for you all. Like I said, this episode we're going to talk about some big news from this week recently and start our mid-season roundup, get the first half of the system, kind of talk about what's going on in the lower half of the system, and then we'll have part 2 for you next, and part 2 will cover the upper half of the system, and we'll get to some of your emails. So without any further ado, we'll get to the big news. Actually, no, we'll have some more further ado. Sorry. In addition to following us on Twitter, I don't think I said my name. I'm Chris Hatfield. Thanks for following the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at SPChrisHatfield. Make sure you follow the website on Facebook, facebook.com/SoxProspects, so that we can manipulate your mood for our experiments. And then, of course, send us emails to the podcast. It's easy. It's podcast@SoxProspects.com. And finally, we'd really appreciate if you could go on and rate and review us using whatever you use to listen to us, whether you're on iTunes specifically. If you could subscribe and rate and review, that'd be great. And then if you could, whatever else you use, if you're on TuneIn or Podcatcher or something else like that, that'd be great. So we really appreciate it. First up, our big news of the week, obviously, is the return of Michael Almanzar from the Baltimore Orioles. I'm just kidding. No, no one cares about that.
Can we role play the conversation when the Orioles DFA'd him and call the Red Sox?
Do you want to do that? Here, John. So. You be Duquette, and Ian, you be Ben Charrington. Go.
Hey Ben, I would have loved to kept Almanzar, but. Buck just can't really find a place for him. What do you think we should do?
Anything but give him back to us. Well, maybe let's trade him to the Astros.
Well, you do have to re-sign Lester, so we'll just give you that. Well, who has to give the 20 grand back? Who had to do that? Do we have to give the 20 grand back?
Yeah, the Red Sox had to pay. So the Orioles paid $500K.
No, 50K.
Sorry, 50K to take him, and the Red Sox is to pay 25K back to get him back to play first base and third base in Portland.
Well, that's a tough one because we just
traded. That's a tough sell for either side.
We just traded Rich Hill for a dollar today, and I'd rather have Rich Hill than Michael Almanzar. So that's a little pricey for me.
Well, he was going to opt out, I think, is just basically what happened.
Okay, but anyway, this conversation you'll see on Deadspin in a few months when the Astros emails get leaked.
This is true. This is true.
I'm sure they asked.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, the actual.
The Red Sox tried to trade Michael Almanzar for Bud Norris, and the Astros said no.
All right, anyways. The big news that I was actually referring to is the call-up of Mookie Betts that happened a few days ago. Mookie Betts in Boston. I guess just really briefly, your reaction, your thoughts, Ian. Too soon, you know, thoughts on his role. What's on the top of your head when you hear Mookie Betts in Boston?
I'm fine with it. I was actually at his last AAA game and playing the outfield, and he looked fine out there. Little couple of false steps here and there, which you've kind of seen in his short stint in the big leagues right now. But I mean, they had to do something. That outfield was producing nothing at the plate. And at the very least, even if Mookie Betts doesn't hit that well, he'll get on base and, you know, provide a little bit of spark. So I'm fine with it.
I feel you there, John. Anything to add on Mookie Betts to Boston?
Yeah. I mean, I was speaking with a scout of the game, I want to say in early May, and he said, what's he even doing in the minors at this point? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, to the point where he had produced at the track record he was on for so long that it wasn't doing anyone any good. So, I mean, they needed a spark, Ian said it himself. So,
yeah, I was talking to a scout Memorial Day weekend actually that said something similar. That was right around when the Red Sox signed JD Drew, I think, and I can't remember if they had signed him yet or not, but it came up. He's like, I don't get why they can't just call him up to the majors and stick him at third base, just to get his bat in the lineup. And this was when he was still in Portland, like you said. So,
yeah, I mean, talking to people who've seen him, they pretty much have said, like, yeah, the same thing. Like, what is he doing here? This is the best player on the field by far. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's been quite a meteoric rise through the system compared to the guy who I first saw back in Lowell a few years ago. Compared to now, it's pretty amazing what he's done.
Well, from Greenville to the majors, it's the shortest stint we've seen other than Jackie Bradley. Since the start of the website, and Bradley was a completely different animal who, you know, taking a guy on the roster in April when you know he's going to be up for 3 weeks is a lot different than asking Mookie Betts to come up and help jumpstart the lineup when the team is on its last legs. So it's.
And you throw around the word precocious a lot because it's a good word and makes it sound smart when you use it, but he literally is precocious.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I mean, I'm sure they've drilled it home and the Boston media, but I don't remember which one of his managers last year. It might have been Kevin Bowles. He was saying, you know, or I guess it would have been Bowles, but somebody told me he.
Billy McMillan, probably.
Probably Billy. He legitimately didn't know how good he was and, like, things he was doing. Someone said that. I didn't make
way
it
to
up.
Put it. Yeah. Well, at any rate, he's in the majors now, so. I mean, you know, the buzz around him, too. He's done a good job handling the pressure of being that top prospect, which does come with pressure. I know at one point this year, little inside baseball, I know the team was at least thinking about limiting media access to him because it was becoming such a circus. So, yeah.
I will say he's taking it all in stride. A couple of days ago in Pawtucket, he was asked about what his favorite show is, and he said he likes to go home and watch SpongeBob after, just, you know, to relax. And he sung the SpongeBob theme song on video.
Wait, really?
Yeah, if you're not confident, you're not going to do that, because he's going to get ripped apart for that for
there's a video somewhere of him doing the Dougie that I can't find.
Like, he's just, I mean, yeah. Everything I was talking to an amateur scout who saw him recently, and everything they just said was just, it's like plus makeup. Like, he's just a great kid, comes from a good family, and everything, you know. That's kind of the unseen part of the game with these guys, is we forget is they're all humans, and, you know, some of them make mistakes and, you know, it don't reach their potential because of it. Other ones get the most out of their abilities and are also just great people, and that really helps them. And he seems to be one of those guys who just, you know, he knows who he is, he embraces it, and yeah, he's just, you know, he goes for it.
They're
and
not just, it's not just numbers on a spreadsheet, if you will.
Yeah. And he's all, yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, congrats to him. I mean, it's been really fun to watch him this year.
Then just real quick question, and then we'll move on from Betts, because I think we've kind of hit the subject plenty. But up for the whole year or no? John?
Yes.
Ian.
Yeah, you don't call him off if you don't think he's ready.
Yeah, I just wonder how they're going to fit everybody when Victorino, Middlebrooks, and Karp come back. But
I don't think Victorino's coming back anytime soon, and I say that with some knowledge. But yeah,
he got shut down. I know Middlebrooks, they started back up on his rehab tonight. So he's started a new 20-day rehab, here on July 1st. We're recording this. So he's got to be up by July 20th.
Yeah. But seeing Victorino,
Karp's got to be up sooner. So
seeing Victorino and Lowell, it was not pretty. He couldn't hit like an 86 mile per hour fastball. And he just looked, he didn't look healthy. And then, he obviously got shut down when he was in Pawtucket. So,
Yeah. I think the move when those guys are healthy, I think the first move is Jonathan Herrera option to Pawtucket. And then I just don't even know what the second move is. I just don't see how Middlebrooks fits back. The first one would be Karp coming back. I don't know what the second move would be.
I think they got to. They're going to either deal someone or
DFA someone. Yeah. I mean, I just don't see Johnny Gomes hits lefties. Cool, but
you could see Bradley sent down actually.
That's true.
And Nava can go down, right?
Yeah, but Nava's hitting now, so though.
Yeah, but they also that he was the guy that did the quick 2-day stint when they needed a spot earlier in June. So
I just look, because if you have Betts and you're committed to playing him every day, he can play. He's probably I would guess he's more comfortable in center field than right field because the reads are a little easier in center field because it's obviously coming straight at you versus kind of an angle.
Yep, I remember this from Willie Mopena being better in center than in corners.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if they're committed to that. Just move him to center field, have the regular platoons in left and right field. Brock Holt could play center in a pinch. And, yeah, you give Bradley some at-bats and Pawtucket, even though he does seem to be coming around a little bit at the plate.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Mookie Betts. So
this is your title defense, Boston.
Yeah, it's not happening. I just don't see it happening. But I think they're not dead yet. But they're close.
There's too many other good teams right now.
Well, there's too many other mediocre teams, and they're more mediocre than the other sort of mediocre teams.
I think that was the better way to put it.
I think
mediocre, like closer to bad, or
they're more worser.
Yeah.
Also, big news today, Chris Resop has been released from Pawtucket, so no more crotch-grabbing relievers in Pawtucket, so that's kind of sad while we're talking about big news in the system. Okay, well, with that said, I think we'll move – well, you know what? Just really quick, let's touch on the guys who have been in Boston. Brandon Workman is up for good now. It looks like Ruby De La Rosa came up and did a job. How do you see those guys fitting in the rest of the year? You know what? No.
Chris, how do you see them fitting for the rest of the year?
How do I?
Yes.
Flip
it around here.
Okay, fine. fair enough. Well, Workman's obviously got a spot now. There's no more, Capuano's gone. DuBronc's in the bullpen, probably going to get traded, one would think. They're going to trade a pitcher or two at the deadline. I would be stunned if they don't. Again, I've been saying this for like 2 off seasons and a trade deadline now, but it's just whether or not it's one of those Workman, De La Rosa, Barnes, Webster, Renato types, or whether it's a PV or a lackey. I think it depends on where they are in a month, honestly. I don't see how they both fit at this point because De La Rosa has shown he can start, and they're going to start him until he can't start anymore. And it's not like the bullpen's doing poorly right now. So, I think both guys are pretty much at the top of their error bars of what they're able to do, but I think they're just going to ride it while they can. Do you think that this is what we've seen out of De La Rosa and Workman is what you can count on them doing long term? I mean, Workman's pitching above the reliever profile that we threw on him when he was at Pawtucket. Ian.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I think that with De La Rosa, it kind of seems that he's coasting at AAA. Like today, he started tonight in Pawtucket, and I can't remember who it was. Someone tweeted out like his velo readings from the first couple of innings, and he was like 89, 92, which is when we've seen him up in the big leagues. He's been, 94, 95, 96. So it seems like he's pitched pretty well in the big leagues. So I think, yeah, I agree that they're going to move someone. And to be fair, De La Rosa's probably pitched better than PVS last couple of weeks. So,
But the thing that kills me is Peavy hasn't been as bad as people want to say he's been. I just feel like, I mean, it's not that he's been great, but it's not like he hasn't been a major league quality starter for most of the year, right? Like, am I crazy to say this? I mean, he's not getting any run support. I mean, you look at his in April, he goes 1-0 if you look at like win loss record, but he had one start that wasn't a quality start in five. He had a bit of a rough patch in May, and now, you know, he had the stinker in Seattle, but other than that, this month he hasn't been horrible. Although I'm looking at the baseball cube, and there's a start where they have him giving up two runs, five of them earned. So I don't know what the hell the deal is with that, but he hasn't been horrible, right? I mean, am I taking crazy pills here? He hasn't been great, but he's a major league number five right now. Is there? Do we know that Ruby comes up and does that, you know, long term before he starts getting around the league and the book gets out on him? You know, and they say, you know, sit out, you know, let the curve go. I'm sorry, let the changeup go and try and hit the fastball. Someone, Ian.
There, go, John. Sorry, I was
no. I don't really know. I think that if we're at the point where that's what's expected, it's not really going to matter. Mm-hmm. So if you're going with, you know, letting Workman go, and if you're letting De La Rosa go, then let him go at this point. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to do anything, then you let these guys take their lumps now and then regroup for next year. So
I guess
that's a non-answer, but
yeah, I just don't get what, like, I just can't see them just cutting PV.
No, but at the same time,
I don't know what they would get for him. Like, is he really going to fetch anything? I mean, maybe he would. Is there a team that's desperate enough?
Everyone needs pitching. I kind of think you're at the point, though, as kind of John kind of alluded to, is with working with De La Rosa, you got to let him get comfortable in a role. Like, mm-hmm. you can't keep yo-yoing them up and down, because when you do that, bad things tend to happen. We kind of saw it last year with Alan Webster. Yeah. Like, he got called up for a few starts and was shaky, and then he'd go back down and just was awful.
Head case,
And it's like, you can't do things like that with your young pitchers, especially ones who had – you know, you think are potential, like, significant long-term assets. You need to call them up and let them stick in the rotation and give them the rest of the season to prove themselves, or which it seems like they've done with Workman, or you need to just be like, look, you're going to be at AAA for the rest of the year. Next year, you've got a chance to compete for a spot in the rotation. You can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they have brains. They have brains. They realize what's going on with them. And mm-hmm. even if you want to say they have great makeup, this affects them.
Yeah, of course it does. Of course he can. And I mean, you know, you hear about how, oh, he said all the right things when he got sent down. Which, okay, great. I mean, I don't know what they were gonna say in public. Like, yeah, oh, he was really pissed and he told us to f off. Like, I mean, what else are they gonna say?
Kevin Gausman's pitching in Aberdeen. That's New York Penn League. He's pitching in Aberdeen tomorrow.
Is he really?
If you want to know about the alternative to letting, like, Workman and De La Rosa just, like, figure it out and shuffle your rotation to the
Why
point
is he
that,
pitching in Aberdeen? Is he hurt?
No. We'll need a starter.
It.
I don't know.
We'll talk about it later.
But that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like,
yeah.
It could be worse.
Yeah. All right.
They could be holding the rotation spot for Miguel Gonzalez.
Yeah, that's a whole podcast episode.
Yes, it is.
I saw Miguel Gonzalez throw a no-hitter, actually.
That like one that? Or...
That Miguel Gonzalez.
All right. Well, that's interesting.
It's the same one who was with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we're talking about.
I saw him throwing a hitter at Frederick, actually, ironically.
But he was like 25.
Yeah, that was back in 2010. And,
like, a full year off Tommy John surgery.
Yep.
Like 25. He's still pitching in Frederick or in Salem.
Rule 5 guy from the
Angels.
Who was it? Angels, thank you.
Yep. All right. Well, now that we've gone off track completely, let's try and steer this back on track. We're going to start our mid-season review, and we're going to start at the bottom, like Drake. And we'll start with – sorry, I had to. I guess I didn't have to, but I did anyway. We're going to start with the Dominican Summer League Red Sox, the DSL Red Sox, who play in the Dominican Summer League Boca Chica South Division. They, on the year after today's game against the – But the Reds are actually the Rojos on the minorleaguebaseball.com website now, which is outstanding.
I kind of like that name, too. What was it? The Boca Chica?
Boca Chica South.
I like that.
Well, because the divisions in the Dominican Summer League are Boca Chica South, Boca Chica North, Santo Domingo North, Boca Chica Baseball City, and I don't know what SPM stands for.
As my high school Spanish class always liked to point out, Boca Chica means mouth girl or girl mouth, depending on which order you want.
Oh, San Pedro, SPM is San Pedro de Macorís. I forget about that.
The mouth girl Red Sox.
Oh, God, I should have seen this coming. All right, anyway, Red Sox, they're 18-9. Big headliner down there is obviously Rafael Devers. He's hitting .347, getting on base at a .456 clip, slugging .554. He's got 3 home runs in 27 games, 6 doubles and 3 triples. Welcome to the Dominican Summer League. I just realized Louis Alexander Basabe has 9 triples, by the way, in
he's fast.
26 games, which is pretty much all of his slugging.
Can we say that 3 home runs, for people who don't know, is a lot in the DSL?
Yeah, 3 home runs in the DSL is a lot.
Like, Xander Bogaerts hit, I think, 4 in his 3. DSL.
I think he only hit three, yeah.
Yeah, so 3 is a lot of home runs, because the DSL is basically high school baseball.
It's glorified Legion ball on bad fields. Yeah. Bogaerts hit 3. Bogaerts, actually, in the DSL, he slugged .423. So he wasn't what he is now yet, but... Devers, first of all, reaction to Devers. We haven't had a podcast since the DSL, but we have had one since the DSL started. We haven't talked about them yet. Devers in the DSL, as disappointing as it might seem or not, I think we all kind of thought he'd be in the GCL. The thing that we're hearing now is that he would be in the GCL if not for a travel permit.
Well, no, they were going to call him up. He wasn't. It wasn't like at the start of the year they were going to put him in the GCL.
Well, right. But they were going to call him up recently, and he's still there because of a travel permit. Like, I want to be like, you didn't see this coming when you sent him to the DSL? Like, I mean, as far as I know, he was an extended.
No, he wasn't extended.
He was?
He was, yes.
Yeah, so he basically got sent down to the DSL.
I will say it seemed like this was the plan, though, because
after
the fact, we heard whispers that from like a while back that this was the idea. We just kind of overlooked them at the time because it seems like they kind of just want to keep him grounded and give him a little taste of pro ball in an area where they'll know he'll succeed because he is 17. So
this is true. And it doesn't actually set him back on his schedule at all. He could very easily go to Lowell next year, where he probably would have wound up anyway. He might have had a shot at Greenville.
That would be the Bogart schedule.
The Bogart schedule would be great, yeah. Well, no, but that's not even, because Bogart didn't start in Greenville. He went there in June.
Right?
Bogart was going to Lowell.
A month before the Lowell season started.
Right. Well,
he was going to Lowell, though. Like, they had a nameplate made for him. And then someone got hurt, and they just said, they moved him up.
The nameplate in Lowell thing doesn't mean a lot, but
they were anticipating,
they make nameplates. I know for a fact they made a nameplate for a guy that was released in spring training because they didn't hear from the team that he got released. Oh, that he retired, not that he got released. So
I think the nameplate thing's a big deal because I have a Lowell nameplate and it's quite nice. I have a Luis Bastardo nameplate. How do you like that? Is that the greatest thing you've ever heard? Probably.
Oh, no. All right. Anyway, so I was talking on Alex Spears' podcast on WEI.com, which you can go and download. Ding, ding, ding. But I was talking to him. We were talking about risers and fallers. To me, Devers, we knew that he could rise, but to me, if he keeps hitting like this, even if it's in the DSL, I think it's going to be tough to keep him out of the top 10 at the end of the year, to be honest. I see some guys in the back end of that top 10 that I'm not sure I wouldn't take Devers over right now. It's going to be interesting to see how he winds up and if they wind up getting him to the GCL as planned. He's clearly not being challenged in the DSL right now. Other hitters, looking at the numbers right now, Yoan Ibar, who was a high bonus signee last July 2nd, and I just realized tomorrow's July 2nd. We should probably mention July 2nd on this part.
Oh, yeah. it's like Christmas for international people.
especially with the Sox. Well, we'll talk about that tomorrow. But yeah, Johan Ibar, an outfielder. He's been splitting time in center field and right field with Luis Alexander Basabe. They've basically been flipping back and forth. Both Ibar and outfielder Basabe are hitting 304. Ibar is not getting on base or slugging in quite the clip that Basabe is. But, you know, 304 average, 342 on base, 420 slugging. Luis Alexander Basabe repeating the level. He's only, I think he's still only 17, though, right? Or he's a young 18. Yeah, he is.
Wouldn't they both be young 18s?
August 96 makes him 18 in August. So this is his age 17 season. Basabe, the outfielder, is getting on base at a 441 clip and slugging 522. But as we were saying, you know, nine triples. So you have to take the slugging with a grain of salt. Those are going to go away when he comes stateside and guys know how to field. Those are pretty much the highlights offensively. Luis Alejandro Basabe, the second baseman, has not been hitting well. He had an injury that led to him getting a late start to the year, so he's still kind of getting his legs underneath him. But that's about it on the hitting side. The pitching side, however, lost to like there, Gerson Batista in five starts. You may remember him from getting a 50-game steroid suspension in 2013. In five starts this year, he has yet to give up an earned run in 26 innings, probably the highlight there, but the strikeout numbers aren't quite where you'd see them. Perhaps a little bit more intriguing is Jonathan Diaz, who was a bonus baby from last season, from last July 2nd. 28 innings, he's allowed 5 earned runs, 21 hits, just 5 walks to 20 strikeouts. He's probably, I would probably go with Diaz over Bautista as the prospect-wise top guy down there for right now. Looking at the numbers, anything else, if you guys are hopefully looking at the rosters and the numbers, anything else in the DSL worth talking about? Either of you gentlemen?
Just on the hitting side, briefly, Rolandini Baldwin.
Oh, Roldani.
Roldani. I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah. that was pretty bad, actually. Yeah. Anyway,
I think you added about 4 fouls that weren't there, but that's fine. Continue.
Whatever. I blame the stats page because it's missing the accents that would have explained it to me, how to say it correctly. But, yeah, he was briefly mentioned in I want to say it was Ben Badler's write-up about the Red Sox signings from last year's international market as someone who showed off intriguing power potential. And I believe he's a little old, though, for the level, I want to say. Like, he signed as, like, an 18-year-old, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he had another home run today. He showed a little pop there. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's been kind of splitting between catcher and DH, Baldwin has, so... yeah, he's March 96, so he's a full 18 for this season. He'll come stateside next year, ideally. But, you know, not quite as old as, say, Franklin Guzman was last year with the 1992 birthday at age 21 in the DSL.
We'll get to him. He's a joy to watch, though.
Okay, interesting. Well, we'll get there. All right, well, moving up to the Gulf Coast League, which I don't think will take very long because nobody there is playing, which is great. You look at the roster, and it looks intriguing. You have both first rounders from this year, Michael Chavis and Michael Kopech, are both signed and on the roster, and they're in uniform when games happen, but they're not playing because it's the Red Sox, and this is what they do, and it drives me nuts because these guys play summer ball all through high school, and they play in these elite showcases, and God forbid they get an at-bat in a Gulf Coast League game too soon because they might strike out or something. I don't know. I don't understand sometimes why they don't let these guys play. Am I missing something here? I don't get it. It drives me nuts.
Let them play.
Yes. Let them play.
Well, at least for the pitchers, there is a structured program that they go on after signing, which takes about 3 weeks. So that's not very surprising about the pitchers.
Right. Fair.
I don't know about the hitters. I can't explain that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the Gulf Coast League Red Sox, they are actually 7-3. They're pretty good. They've had kind of a skeleton crew of a lineup for a little while now because the draftees took so long to get into camp. But they're there now and playing. Stat-wise, on the offensive side, you've got not a whole lot going on. Statistically, not really any highlights. Although Victor Acosta, who is playing third base, we thought he might move over to second base a little bit. And that might be part of why They're okay with Devers getting some time in the DSL to give Acosta some time at third in the Gulf Coast League, because that's going to be Devers for the most part once he moves up. Acosta's only hitting .242, but with a .375 on base, he's got 5 walks to 6 Ks, and he's slugging .485. He's got a home run, 5 doubles. He's basically the only guy down there hitting for any power. He's offensively been the highlight thus far. But, you know, that said, there's four guys on the team that have played into all 10 games, basically, and everyone else has been playing in like 5 to 7 games. So the sample sizes are small. On the mound, again, small sample size, but Deadgar Jimenez has been very good in 3 games. He's 14 innings, 10 hits, 4 walks, 7 Ks. I want him to get the walks down a little bit, but 3-0 with a 1.29 ERA in 3 games is pretty solid. Kevin Harris out of the bullpen in a piggyback role, 9 innings, 7 hits, no runs, 1 walk to 8 strikeouts. He's been very good. Other highlights have been Luis Ramos, and then a guy that I know you wanted to talk about, Williams Jerez. He was a second-round pick way back in, 2010? Was it? 2011, sorry.
It wasn't that far ago.
2011 draft. He went to the Gulf Coast League into Lowell as an outfielder. If you don't remember the 2011 draft, he was the 5th guy that the Red Sox picked behind Matt Barnes, Blake Swihart, Henry Owens, and Jackie Bradley. Oh, and in the 5th round, they drafted a guy named Mookie Betts. It's an okay draft already, basically.
You can't hit them all.
No, you can't hit on all of them. You can't really blame the Red Sox for maybe missing on this one. But that said, at age 22 this season, he moved to the bullpen. Because offensively, it just wasn't happening. Repeating Lowell last year, he hit .176, I think is all that really needs to be said. He never had an OPS above .600. Couldn't really hit, but what are you hearing about him on the mound, Mr. Ian, in his 2 appearances and or in extended?
Well, that was mostly from extended, but apparently he was up to 95 with his fastball from the left side, which is a good thing in general. And he was able to throw strikes with it, which is kind of surprising because when you're converting a guy, that usually doesn't go well at first. The issue is, obviously, he really doesn't have any secondary pitches because why would he need them? He was a hitter.
Right.
So it's a work in progress. It's a lottery ticket. But, I mean, he's still only 22 years old, so he's younger than a lot of the recent draftees or about the same age as a college draft pick. So if you look at it that way, it's, you know.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. If he'd gone to college instead of going pro after the 2011 draft, he would be coming off his sophomore season, right? Junior season.
No, he would have been drafted. Yeah, junior. Well, I graduated when I was 22, but yeah. So someone to watch, just a little interesting that he's actually showing some intriguing tools already down there.
Yeah, this would have been his junior year he just finished. Because he would have been 2011 to 12 as a freshman, 2012 to 13 as a sophomore.
Oh, yeah, because he was 19 when he graduated high school.
He was old when he graduated high school. And rumored to be older, but
we can't say that.
Baseless.
Oh, come on.
Well, there were rumors. I mean, I'm not saying that we believe them. I'm just saying there was an article about how no one believed how old he was.
Oh, no, I was trying.
I asked him about it. He said he was as old as he said he was. What are you going to do?
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
good
God.
For you. That's journalism right
That's
there.
That's intrepid journalism.
I was a reporter for the site back then.
This is true. Yeah, he used to write for us.
Ooh, shots fired.
No, it's fine. He's moving on up in the world. Hey, at least he still, you know, does things like podcasts and just doesn't big time us. But yeah, in that 5 innings,
shots
no
fired.
5
shots fired.
5 innings, no walks, 5 hits. It's good so far for a project. I already probably would take him over some real pitchers that are on that team that were drafted as pitchers. So that's a good thing for him, at least.
I would agree with you. I think I know exactly who you're talking about, too.
There's some guys there that are just not good. I don't see any reason to belabor the point on the Gulf Coast League, so let's move up to Lowell, where things are better-ish. Not one of the better Lowell squads we've seen, in large part because the big-ticket draftees. Basically, the only big-ticket draftee that's there is Sam Travis. You have seen Lowell some, Ian, so why don't you give us one hitter and one pitcher who are highlights, and then we'll get into the rest while I kind of pull up some stats and things.
Yes. I think, We can talk about Travis maybe in a little bit when we talk about the draft picks or the draftees. So I'm going to hit on someone who was drafted last year who got a little bit of a bonus, Nick Longhi. He was a first baseman slash outfielder drafted, I believe, in the 33rd or 34th round last year out of a high school in Florida. And he got $440K to sign. He was pretty highly regarded coming into his senior year.
30th round, by the way.
30th round. It was 440, right?
Yes.
He was pretty highly regarded coming into his senior year, but he just had frankly, an awful senior season and just couldn't really hit and fell because of that. But he's coming to Lowell, and he showed some pretty intriguing tools. He's got some raw power during batting practice, showing probably plus raw power, hitting balls out. In the game, that hasn't really translated, although he has had I've seen him hit three doubles that were probably home runs, but at Lowell, it's really hard to tell sometimes if it's a home run or not because they don't have a yellow line on the top of the fence. So he could have a better stat line than he is, but he is hitting 350 right now. He's making a lot of hard contact. The strikeouts are a little high. He's pretty aggressive, doesn't take a lot of walks, but he actually
10 strikeouts and 49 at bats.
But the thing is, he has an idea of what he's doing. It's not like one of those really raw high school guys who has no idea what a curveball looks like. Like, he knows what it is. I think it's just the adjustment period adjusting to major league pitching since he got he didn't get that many at bats last season. Mm-hmm. So defensively, it's a corner outfielder, maybe first base or first base profile. So it's nothing sexy, but at the plate, he's someone to watch and probably is one of the better hitters on that team. Well, no, he is one of the better hitters on that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's hitting .347, which leads the squad on base at a .365 clip. So not super high, but among guys who have a significant number of plate appearances, it looks like it's second on the club. And then he's slugging .469, which, again, among guys with a significant number of at-bats, it's up there. It doesn't lead the team, but I think it looks like it's third or fourth. Well, third among guys that aren't former major leaguers. He's having a good year. How about on the mound, anybody that kind of sticks out to you from seeing them or hearing things from them?
On the mound, I would say the two standouts, I'm going to cheat because one of them's a rehab person, so I don't think it counts, was Jason Garcia. He had Tommy John surgery last year and missed the whole season.
Yeah. I think he played very, very little. It happened very early on.
But anyway,
appeared in 9 games. So
yes, he didn't pitch very much. Nope. And he was their opening day starter, and I've seen him actually a couple times now. And his velo has improved since he had the surgery. He was sitting 92, 94, up to 95, even 196, I think, in there. Mm-hmm. And so the velocity was good. The delivery needs some work still, but it's actually better than when I first saw him. But it's still a little rough. And then the secondary is he doesn't have a lot of feel for them, but that's not surprising because he hasn't had to throw. He's coming back from surgery, so that's usually the last thing to come back. So he's actually a pretty interesting arm, probably in a bullpen role down the road, but he's someone to watch. And then the other guy is someone we highlighted during spring training, mm-hmm. German Tavares.
Yep, your boy.
Yeah, his first outing that I saw of him wasn't very good, but I'm going to make some paper ruffling sounds right now.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, while we're getting into that, he basically had a bad outing in his first outing where in 2 1/3 he gave up 3 runs on 2 hits and a walk. But since then, in 4 outings, he's gone 3 innings, 2 innings, 2 2/3, and 2 innings. Only has given up 6 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, and has struck out 9 guys in however many innings I said that was. That'd be, quick math, 5, 7... 9 2/3. So
starting in Salem next year.
He's up to 96 with his fastball. And it's heavy. Like he threw one where that started over the middle of the plate and just ended up the catcher caught it like a foot outside. So it's got a lot of movement. And the biggest change, though, between the first outing and the second outing was his slider was really sharp the second time I saw him around. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking plus, like, he was throwing plus pitches, a plus slider in that outing. Granted, obviously, it wasn't consistent, but he threw the majority of the more plus offerings. And it was sharp, like, mid-80s with depth. He threw one at 87 that was just disgusting that the hitter had absolutely no chance against. And so, yeah, he's someone who's pretty interesting because you're looking at, you know, it's a big fat, it's a pro, it's plus potential for, you know, a plus velo and a plus secondary offering. That's a bullpen arm right there. So he's pretty intriguing still. And most likely we'll get dealt with the trade deadline.
I was just about to ask you, what team do you think he gets traded to next trade deadline?
Well, maybe it depends, I guess, if they're buyers or sellers, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you heard Nefio Gondo is like up to 98 or 99 in the minors, for example, is another one of those arms they dealt.
Double A. Frankie Montas.
Yep. Juan Rodriguez.
Eventually, it's going to come back and bite him a little bit, but hey, that's their MO.
Alcantara.
Yeah.
At
any rate, not too many other guys there worth talking about, but some guys I figure we could do some quick hits on. Mauricio Dubon, what are you hearing about him?
Yeah,
shortstop.
Yeah, he's actually pretty interesting. He's a good runner. At the plate, he's aggressive. He's very aggressive. He swings at a lot of pitches, but he has good bat to ball skills, so he doesn't swing and miss a lot. There's a little pop in there. It's more doubles power right now, but I have seen him hit a home run, and in batting practice, he's hit a couple out. So, in the field, he's playing shortstop right now over Raimel Flores, which is a little bit of a surprise since Flores got, I want to say, like, he got a big bonus, close to $1 million.
Raimel Flores, yeah. Flores got 900 even.
But yeah, so Dubon is playing shortstop. He's showed pretty well there. He's got enough arm for the position, decent actions. And he's someone who's pretty interesting too.
And then we did mention Franklin Guzman. We should probably hit on him really quick.
Yeah, it's just with Guzman, it was put to me best during spring training. Actually, John, you were there that day too. We were over at the Twins complex and we're watching three games at once. And Scout just says to me, like, watch Guzman play. He has no idea what he's doing. And he's raw as hell, but boy, is it fun to watch. And he plays with reckless abandon. He'll run through walls. He'll just swing at everything. But if he makes contact, it'll go a long way. And he's a plus runner on the base pass. He's got a good arm. Like, he's a toolsy guy. The issue is that he's 22 and literally has no idea how to play baseball.
Yeah, it was funny because I saw that he had made the DSL – or, sorry, made Lowell straight from the DSL, which is usually kind of a cause to, you know, perk up and pay attention. But then you realize how old he is. And it's like, oh, well, he probably should have been in Greenville, to be honest.
It was one of those things. Someone who hadn't seen him before turned to me and was like, is this guy, like, a prospect? And I was like, well, he's 22. And he goes, oh. So he was just like, he was so sad because, I mean, if he's like an 18, 19 year old, then you're
you can get away with that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah. So.
Yeah. The line is 265, 324, 500. He's got 9 hits, 4 of them for extra bases.
Yeah.
Which kind of says it all. And actually, I just should ask, and the answer is probably fine if you say I have no idea, but Jordan Betts has 3 home runs to lead the team. He's the third baseman out of Duke who the Red Sox drafted this year and late. Anything there, or just kind of college guy in Lowell?
College guy in Lowell.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I don't want to say that bad.
No, that's fine. No, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, he's a college guy in Lowell. That's not
I think the other one. Thing. The other one, Raimel Flores, actually – he's been getting some love among the scouting community who've been coming in and out of ball.
Even at second base.
Yeah.
See, that's the interesting thing with that bonus to see that he got pushed off of shortstop. Dubon is getting most of the reps at short, which is really – I thought they'd at least be kind of flipping back and forth.
He's a 7 runner. So if you have a major league tool like that, you're going to get noticed. But he's also pretty good in the field. And there is some surprise among – folks that he is not getting reps at shortstop, I will say, because for what you said. But he's actually, you know, he's shown a little bit of an idea at the plate. He's the issue with, I think we say this every year with Red Sox shortstop prospects, he is really, really small and really skinny and looks like a 15-year-old.
Right.
And it inhibits him at the plate because he's not strong enough. And so, you know, that's why the strikeout numbers are high.
Numbers are also high. I mean, it's 7 walks the average is 262 and he's getting on base at a 404 clip.
Well, that's what I was saying. He has an idea of what he's doing at the plate. The issue is just, he just doesn't have enough bat speed at this point because his hands are there, but he just doesn't have the strength to get the bat through the zone. And so, you know, that's the issue. That's what's holding him back the most. But
by 3 pitches too.
When he puts them all in play, you know, he can run and that's a good thing. So yeah, he's someone who's pretty interesting, a little interesting.
A little bit interesting. He's sort of interesting. All right. So then in that case, unless John has anyone he wants to add, to ask about, let's move up to Greenville to close out part one of this podcast, where things were sort of interesting and now are kind of less interesting. I mean, I feel like there's more guys here that I should be excited about than I am. But let's start again in the field slash at the plate with Manuel Margot, who is a guy who's getting a lot of buzz out of there still, even though the numbers don't necessarily jump out at you if you look on the season line. Margot's season line is 271, 338, 417, six home runs. At least one of those is inside the park. I think maybe two. At least I think we'll go with one for now. But, you know, 12 doubles and three triples. He's hitting for a little bit of extra base pop. And when you kind of isolate out in June, for example, it's up to 291, 356, 481. All three of his triples were in June, strangely enough. So he's kind of coming around a little bit. Eight steals this month, or last month in 10 attempts on the year. He's 25 steals in 31 attempts. Manuel Margot, what are we hearing on him? And actually, John, what did you see from him? Because you got to see Greenville recently.
Yeah, I caught a couple of games in Greenville, and honestly, part of the reason that I'm still waiting to write on some of the guys is that pretty much everyone you said you should be a lot excited about a lot more guys is that the buzz on all of them is that, look, this is the first year that they're playing full season ball, and they're learning as they're doing, and not a lot of them have a lot of cover, so while they're learning, they're out there doing it every single day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that jumped out about Margot, I was coming down from the press box in Hagerstown, and it was pretty much dead center behind the plate, and he had what I can only describe as a Jackie Bradley-esque pop-up, basically, that was out in the gap, and he ran it down just like Jackie would, and that's what the manager at Greenville, Darren Fencer, said. He said, you know, that's something that Jackie would have done. And it's little things like that, you know, while you're still able to do that, even if he's not hitting, if he's able to do that and not really carry that out into the field and still show all those things that he's capable of, I think that's one of the more promising things to come out of his season so far.
And then, like you said, it's getting to play every day. He had a little bit of a swoon in May, and he's come out of it, which is also good to see from a guy, you know, only hit 239 with a 323 on base. You know, he was only hitting 239, but he still walked 11 times in the month, so... it's been there. It's been there. What are you hearing on Margot, Ian?
Yeah, I think he's improved. I mean, from when we saw him last year in Lowell, he was ultra aggressive at the plate. He swung at everything. He didn't really take walks. But the tools were all there. Like you said, John kind of mentioned, he's a very good defender already. He's a plus defender already. It's just at the plate, it was just, you know, kind of, you could see the hands worked and there was bat speed, but it was just putting it together. And it seems like he's doing a better job of that this year. He's cut down his strikeouts, walks are up. He's always going to be, he's a plus plus runner. So the steals will be there. And it's kind of, you know, it's one of those guys that you can see it and it's just going to take time. And this is a very good first step for him in full season ball. And I would kind of go the other way in what you said. I think the stat line is really impressive for what he's doing. Cause he's what, a 20-year-old, you know, in his first season of pro ball, or in his first season of full season ball. So I would go another way and say, that's actually he's exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. He's actually 19 all year.
Even better.
He turns 20 in late September.
Yeah, even better. He's really exceeded my expectations in terms of what I was expecting a line out of him in full season ball.
Hang on. If he was born in 94 and it's 2014, in September he turns 20.
Yeah, he turns 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I think that he, I've been impressed by the line. And with that, he's the one that people like to talk about when you talk about Greenville.
The other guy that I wanted to ask about is Wendell Rijo. Rijo started hot in April. I mean, after April, his line was 309, 440, 471. Has cooled off significantly since then, in part because in May he got on base at a below 300 clip. His OPS was 619. Improved a little bit in June. It's up to his line on the season now is 262, 350, 391. Not bad, not great. He's actually a year younger than Margot, so he's 18 until September 4th. So even younger for the level. What are we hearing about Wendell Rijo? John, did you catch him at all? Would you get on with Rijo? Anything?
I saw him a couple games. I didn't see him well, but he was another one of those guys. You know, they kind of threw a blanket all over all the big names on that Greenville team and said that the development isn't something you're going to be able to see by reading across the line. I know Ian told me that, you know, when I was asking him for story ideas when I went down there, he said that Riho is the son of a scout and, you know, he knows what he's supposed to be doing.
Yep.
And he's out there doing it. And I think the coaching staff is seeing that. And I think the coaching staff is seeing that. And that's kind of all they can ask, even if he's not, wowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, another thing that I had seen in extended and in spring training is he tends to get a little bit lax at times in the field, maybe, you know, kind of ole a baseball instead of getting in front of it. You know, so maybe even improving in the mechanics of the game in that sense is, you know, going to help him in his development, which not something you would necessarily want to have to deal with, but it's not that he's an attitude issue or anything like that. It's just, you know, a matter of repetition and things like that. The last guy on the offensive side I wanted to ask you guys about quickly, only because he's getting a lot of buzz because of what he has done so far this year, is Carlos Asuaje. He's a guy who I know Ian had pegged as a sleeper out of Lowell last year, and this year in a true utility role, bouncing between second, third, the outfield. He's hit .307 with a .402 on base and a .534 slugging. Carlos Asuaje was the 11th round pick last year out of Nova Southeastern in Florida. A guy who we actually found out part of the issue with him was that he just wasn't getting seen because his agent kind of stunk. There was an article on Baseball Prospectus written by the guy who is his agent now about how Asuaje last year had this agent who didn't know what he was doing, that wasn't giving him any attention because draftees basically don't make agents any money. This guy came in, helped him out, and we know that Asuaje wound up getting some attention, at least from the Red Sox. Might have flown under the radar for some other teams. I think Nova Southeastern is actually in Fort Myers, right?
No idea.
No? Okay.
It's really close. It's really close to Fort Myers.
It's close. So that might have been part of why we were able to see him.
God, I
well,
know.
I also he was in the Cape League though, so it wasn't like teams didn't have a chance to see him.
This is true. This is true. But
yeah,
is it Fort Lauderdale?
Fort Lauderdale. Okay, sorry. Maybe there's a I think there's a satellite campus or something. Then
there's a building
oh,
like,
no,
right
there
off
is,
the
you're
exit
right.
we get off of.
You're right.
There's
this, there is.
Yeah, there's a satellite campus that was right next to the hotel where
you're right.
we stayed this year.
I'm pretty sure we said
where
that
you
exactly.
guys did.
Yeah,
we said that exact thing during spring training. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Anywho, Carlos Asuaje. People seemed kind of surprised that he didn't get the bump up to Salem after the All-Star break. He hasn't really slowed down at all. Granted, his best month was April, but he got on base at a 400 clip in May, and in June he hit 300, although he basically stopped walking, strangely enough. He had just 4 walks in the whole month of June in 25 games.
Well, you know what they say, you can't walk your way out of Greenville.
This is true. This is true, apparently. although by this is true, I mean you did make that up just now, and it sounds...
Well, you can't walk your way off the island. You can't walk your way out of Greenville, probably.
Exactly. You know, so he's maybe slowed down a little bit as of late. Now that he's, you know, kind of seen some guys go up, maybe a little bit of disappointment. But I'm speculating here. Hearing anything on Carlos Asuaje, prospect or suspect? Is he a guy?
Yeah, I think he's. I mean, he's not a guy, but he's like interesting. Mm-hmm. He's not an elite guy or any, you know, he's not like a top 20 guy in the system, but it's a utility infielder profile. I mean, or utility player profile. I think he's playing outfield too, right? Did I make that up?
Yes. No, he is.
But
for the first time in his career, actually, he didn't even play it in high school or college or anything.
He's one of those guys. He's got a decent idea of what to do at the plate. Short little swing, compact. He's actually hitting for way more power than I would have ever projected.
9 home runs on the year.
I think it leads the team, yeah, looking at the stats. Mm-hmm. But he knows what he's doing at the plate. Contact oriented swing, but he hits made a lot of hard contact in Lowell last year. And in the field too, he actually was decent at third base, which is where he was playing primarily last year. He's got arm for the position. Think he could probably play second base, shortstop in a pinch. So yeah, he's someone who's actually, I'm kind of really shocked he's still in Greenville, to be honest.
Yeah. 8 triples, by the way. I think he had 5 in like the first month or something silly.
Is there someone playing third base or playing everywhere in Salem that I'm missing that's blocking him? I'm just wondering.
In Salem,
Jimmy Ryder's playing third base.
In Salem. And well, so in Salem, we'll talk more about them later. But the
that's what I meant.
The lineup in Salem right now is Mario Martinez and Jansen Witt are splitting the infield corners. The second baseman is Mike Miller now that Vinicio is back up. Ryan Dent is also getting some time there, and Dent's kind of the utility outfielder slash infielder slash everywhere. And then Reed Gregnani is also playing a utility role. So they have a lot of utility types in Salem as well, I think is kind of the issue. I think we'll start to see some of that shakedown soonish. Actually, I'd be stunned if Asuahe is still in Greenville August 1, or maybe August 5th, we'll go with. If he's still there August 5th, I'll be surprised. Going to the other side of the ball, on the mound, it's a rotation of guys that are all interesting. We might as well start with Trey Ball, because that's the one that everyone's wondering what the heck is going on there. John, did you get to see him at all?
I did.
And what's the deal? Well, let's go. So the numbers aren't pretty. Trey Ball in the year in 11 starts, he's 1-7 with a 7.27 ERA. In 43 and a third innings, he's allowed 71 hits. He's walked 17 and struck out 29. We had the whole strep throat thing where he went on the DL with strep throat. He's had two starts where he hasn't made it out of the first inning due to pitch count. But then again, he's also had some really good starts. In fact, he dealt tonight in five innings, in what was probably undoubtedly his best start of the year. What date did you see him? Did you see him at Hagerstown on the 15th?
Yeah, and even that, like, that's one of those starts that looks bad from not from not being there. But he, while the stuff wasn't great, he got through five innings, basically, and then they sent him back out for the sixth because he needed his pitches, and then it was pop-up, double, triple, home run, single, and then run scored on the back end. It's like, that's not going to look good. The thing with Ball is that pretty much everyone has to, if they haven't already, realized that it's a project where you can going to stake your claim on either side of the fence is whether it's too much of a project to have taken at seven in that draft.
Which I think in that draft is an important thing because, frankly, there are a couple guys behind him who are making some noise. But that said, it's easy now to say the Red Sox should have taken, like, J.P. Crawford, but
Or Hunter Harvey.
Which is really easy to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to say that now. But that said, like, Hunter Harvey fell to... What did Harvey fall to? 22.
He's awesome.
I mean, he's Hunter great. Harvey. But that said, 21 teams passed on him, of which, I mean, Harvey probably goes TARP 5 if you redo that draft right now. So,
And look at the other guys. I saw one of the Baseball America guys tweeted out a couple, I think it was last week, he was really trying to get a good report on Ball and he just hadn't gotten one yet. And I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I can honestly do it. I mean, the fastball got above 90 once in six innings.
Really? Because that's below where we had him in spring training.
Yeah, it was like...
Well, in spring training, he was like 89, 91.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, this was sitting like 88, 90, I think would be fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
The curveball flashed better than we saw it in spring training. I'll give it that. But, you know, the changeup was meh. It's...
Well,
You see him and you say, it's got to be in there. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to give it all the time in the world to get it out of him.
Well, more outings like tonight where he threw five innings of one hit, no walk ball. He faced one over the minimum in five innings, striking out three against the Asheville Tourist lineup that features three very good prospects in David Dahl, Raymel Tapia, and Ryan McMahon.
Those are very good prospects.
Yeah, McMahon, who then took Jonathan Aro deep in the sixth inning. That's not an easy lineup to go through the way he did.
Was that at Asheville?
No, in Greenville.
Oh, because that Asheville park is a joke. It's really? Like 290 to left field. And so, yeah, that's what I was on.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think kind of on Ball, I think that we kind of had to see that this was kind of coming. Like,
we knew it was coming in spring training.
Yeah, when we saw in spring training, this is raw. Like, you look at him and he looks like an athlete, and he is an athlete, but it's just like, he was a two-way player. He didn't pitch very much. He didn't start throwing his curveball, I think, till his senior year of high school.
Junior year.
His changeup is definition of a work in progress. It's nothing. It's not very good right now. And when we saw that, it's kind of like, well, he probably should be in Lowell. Mm-hmm. But can you send the seventh pick to Lowell? I don't know. So it's like, yeah, I think that there's going to be bumps and bruises along the way. And he's thrown 43 innings plus whatever like negligible innings he threw last year. You can't judge someone off the like this. You know what I mean? Like, everyone is going to have their struggles. If you're scouting the stat line, obviously you're going to be down on him. But when you hear reports, though, like I think it was one of the BA guys tweeted that scouts are down on his mechanics, that's more of a concern than the stat line.
Mechanics up here, I think I've read arm speed is low too.
That's a concern. Yeah. That's the issue. I don't care about the stat line. He could have a 1 ERA, and if I heard that, I'm going to be concerned. Mm-hmm. And so it's like with him, you just got to – I think you have to give it time, and this year might be a lost year. And he's still only 20 years old, whatever. And, you know, if it's going to be a lost year, then you come back next year and you do it again, because they're not going to move him to they're not going to move him to hitting, and he's not going to be like – they're not going to shut him down or anything.
This isn't going to be Stetson Alley.
Yeah, no, this is he's going to be – they're going to keep throwing him out there, and he's going to have to – it could be good for him. You know, at this stage of your development, he's probably used to being the best player on the field, and, you know, it's going to be pretty humbling when you're getting bombed every time out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he comes back next year and makes him a better pitcher, then that's fine. That's just the developmental process. It's not a linear thing. It's going to be up and down for most players. Mm-hmm. The Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts developmental process, I think, has spoiled Red Sox fans, because – prospects don't develop like that.
That's not the extreme outlier. It's unreasonable to expect that from anybody.
Exactly. And those guys are the extreme outlier. And I think it's had a negative impact on how ever they view other prospects, similar to Henry Owens. Like, the Henry Owens development is not how high school pitchers develop. Mm-hmm. Most high school pitchers take a long time to get through the system.
Right.
And we're seeing it with most guys. Henry Owens is pretty much the exception.
This whole class, but also
that's a good transition. But
I don't want to step on a transition. No. But everyone's so quick always to like be like, you go to like an A-ball game and you're like, boom, that guy's a guy. Boom, that guy's a guy. And you don't really talk about the guys that aren't guys. But I think he's kind of in that weird place where you have to talk about him. And if he wasn't, you know. If he wasn't 7 overall, you just say, you know, he's a high school kid. He hasn't really pitched a lot, and that's it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I think
it's kind of startling when someone goes to see Trey Ball and he's not. It's not boom. That guy's a guy.
Right.
That's kind of jarring in this setting that we kind of find ourselves in.
Well, and I think also the 7th overall pick thing is a huge thing, because when you look at, as you said, when you look at someone who's the 7th overall pick, you expect them to be like, you will know it immediately. And with Ball, I mean, if you looked at him as just from a straight like athleticism, size, projection thing, maybe he does look like a top 10 pick, but the skills aren't there right now.
Well, and go ahead.
I was going to say last year's draft also was atrocious.
Mm-hmm. It was
so awful. In a normal year, Trey Ball is not a 7th pick.
Yeah, in the redraft that I saw, he still went like in the first 15 picks.
Exactly.
Like the year he's having.
So if he was like, for example, drafted in the 3rd round, like there's some pitchers in Salem right now who were like 2nd and 3rd round picks who got, you know, decent bonuses, who are performing at similar to Ball or worse. Mm-hmm. No one would think another thing of, like, we don't even mention Austin Maddox, and Austin Maddox is getting bombed in Salem again.
Well, he's not pitching in Salem right
now. Okay, this season he got bombed for the third straight year, and he's never really performed since he entered the system, but no one really mentions him because he's a third round pick.
Well, and that's the comparison I was going to make, is at this stage of his development when Mookie Betts was in Lowell not really doing a whole lot and just kind of being, he might be a sleeper, like no one was freaking out about it and saying they should move him to pitcher. You know what I mean? Like saying that they should change his position to the outfield then.
I wrote him up then and said Cooley could be a utility guy. I was wrong. But, you know, or it looks like I was wrong at this point.
Well, he still could be.
Yeah, that's why I changed that. I hope. But, I agree. It's, you know, development is hard.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand how difficult it is to go in, you know, night in. We look at it from, you know, it's all fun and games. Hey, they get to play baseball for a living. How great is that? Like, the pressure these kids feel and just how hard they have to work night in and night out is something that I don't think we really understand, and it gets underrated. And yeah, baseball is a hard game.
Real quick, because we're kind of running long in this, but there's a lot of guys in Greenville who are pitchers who are interesting. John, really quick, who did you see while you were there other than Ball?
It was Ball and Joe Gunkel.
Joe Gunkel, all right. And he's in Salem, and we'll get him in part two. awesome.
Pretty good, though. He was pretty good.
All right, well, let's just real quick lightning round, I guess, on these guys. Teddy Stankiewicz, 6-6. He's made all 15 of his starts, 78 innings. He's been much better of late. He's been a guy that's gotten better as the season has gone on. In April, the ERA was 4.15. Actually, he's gotten bombed his last two times out, and he's killing me. Never mind.
Yeah, that number was a lot lower when I saw him.
Yeah, okay, never mind then. So we'll put it this way. He's had his ups and downs. He had a stretch of a couple starts. Of his last four starts, the first two were very good. In 13 innings, he allowed one unearned run, and that was it. Struck out 9, walked 2, allowed 4 hits. In his last two starts in 9 innings, he's allowed 19 hits and 12 runs. Typical ups and downs. We cool with that? Where Teddy Stankiewicz is at in his development, not seeing him stand out at all. Even this month, 22-5 K-to-walk ratio. So that's at least improving.
I think he's a lot closer to the first two of the last four starts than the last two of the last four starts.
Cool. All right. The guy who I've been kind of disappointed by this year is Jamie Callahan. ERA is over 6.5 in just under 70 innings, 92 hits allowed. He's getting hit, and he's walking guys, 31 walks in just under 70 innings. To 59 strikeouts. We were kind of excited about seeing his velocity uptick in spring training, but it just hasn't seemed to translate. Thoughts on Jamie Callahan, Ian?
Straight fastball, rough mechanics. Secondaries need work. It's going to happen. I mean, he's probably a reliever in the end, but yeah, that kind of stuff is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, listen to what we're saying, though. Like, we're excited about velocity, and that's what I heard from the pitching coach. He just wants to go out there and just...
And
impress people with radar guns.
Which
and
isn't.
If you do that, you can overthrow and you can leave it up, and if it's straight, it's gonna hit. So that's that's something that, as a young guy, I want to say is this his 18 or 19th season? I know he was a young draft dude.
19, I think, because he was drafted as a 17.
He's 19. He turns 20 in late August.
So we can. We can smile and say he's learning it as long as he learns it.
All right. Miles Smith is a guy who he's allowed 61 hits in 57 innings, but he also has walked 41 guys. He's a guy that I think you wrote about, John, at the beginning of the year. He's had his flashes back at Hagerstown on June 13th, where you apparently just missed him. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, but just 2 Ks. He's only struck out 34 guys in 57 innings. Just a guy who's going out there learning to pitch, throwing hard with new mechanics, or
that was a rainy doubleheader, and what the coaching staff was saying on him is just a guy who's trying to become a pitcher, not a thrower. It's such a cliche, and those are all the buzzwords, but they wouldn't be if people didn't say him a lot, and I guess they apply to a lot of people.
Okay, two more guys I want to ask about. First is the Aussie Daniel McGrath, in 8 starts, 39 innings. 28 hits, 19 walks, 32 Ks. Probably the one of the better lines of the guys we've talked about, at least in terms of the starters. Hear anything about Daniel McGrath?
He has secondary pitches, which is big. He doesn't. No, I'm dead serious. Because at this level, if you can throw 2 secondary pitches for strikes, you're way ahead of most of the pitchers. And even though he doesn't throw that hard, he's like high 80s. He can get away with it because he can mix in those secondary pitches, and he just keeps guys off balance.
All right. Anything to add, John?
That is exactly right. Good job, Ian.
Okay. And one guy that I wanted to ask about, and I don't know if there's anything there, but it's a guy who intrigued me because the numbers have been so good the past two seasons, is a guy that's pitching in piggyback role right now. But Jonathan Aro, 48 innings, 54 Ks to 15 walks, just 31 hits allowed. Just a matter of a guy who maybe should be up a level and is kept down because he's just a guy, or... but are you hearing anything on Jonathan Aro? He's a guy that intrigues me.
Yeah, sorry, just a sec. I was bringing something up. He he's got a pretty big fastball. He's touching the mid-90s with his fastball, like the 95 range, but he's, you know, sitting low to 92, 93. Mm-hmm. The secondaries, the changeup is there, but the slider is decent. And, I think that it's just, it seems like I haven't seen him this year, but, seems like he's throwing strikes, and yeah, if you're throwing strikes with velocity and one workable secondary again, then you can you're gonna have some success. And I think I want to say you cut that part. I forgot what I was gonna say.
Whatever, we'll leave it in. Authenticity.
That's not gonna get cut.
No, yeah, no way. We don't do edits here.
All right. Well, that's Greenville, and I think at that point we're gonna wrap this one up and see into part two. So thank you all for downloading. Make sure you download part two of our mid-season recap. We'll be back to talk about the upper levels of the system, take a few reader emails, and maybe touch very briefly on the July 2nd signing season beginning for 2014. For Ian Kundle and John Mioli, I'm Chris Hatfield. Make sure you go on and rate and review us on iTunes or Podcatcher or TuneIn or whatever it is you use to listen to us. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That was all at the top of the show. At Sox Prospects, SoxProspects.com, news.soxprospects.com, Feed the Empire. At any rate, for these guys, thanks for downloading. We'll be back in a little bit.